Chapter 3. Wake and Remember. Son of Horus. Blood and Luck. Prison Ship Acus, Uranus High Orbit. Sleep came for Mercedes like a thief stealing the light, closing her eyelids and pulling her down into the dark. She had tried to stay awake, even though she knew that she would never be able to outrun it. She had stared at the caged lamp in the ceiling of her cell, stood up and paced a tiny circle between the walls when she felt her eyes fluttering shut. She wanted very much not to sleep. The dream of the night before had left a shiver of fear in her. Loken, the vengeful spirit. It had seemed so vital. And she knew that you could not dismiss what happened in dreams as insignificant, simply because they were not real. She had spent years living her memories again and again, trying to recall and hold on to every detail she could. Now it was all she could do not to smell the blood and hear the screams. So she had fought back sleep, and tried to think through what was happening as she walked the scant meters of her cell and stared at the light. She tried to keep her mind filled with questions about the present. Why had she been moved from the prison around Titan to a ship? Was that Loken's doing? Or was there another reason? She shook her head as she felt herself contemplate stopping for a moment and sitting down. There was no night in this box of metal, but it must have been almost a day's worth of hours since she had slept. She had to stay awake. She was on a ship, and guarded. Was she alone, or were there others with her? An instinct told her that there would be more prisoners on the ship, but she could not be certain. If there were others, where were they going? It would not make sense to move prisoners that were a threat to the Imperium. Unless... She blinked up at the caged lamp, swaying. She had to stay awake! She had to... Unless... She raised her head from the pillow and looked up at the ceiling. Painted birds soared through a painted sky of clouds and sunlight. She sat up. The window was open. The wind was blowing warm from outside. She could smell citrus blossom. The trees under the hydrodome enclosure were in late flower, heavy with scent and pollen and the promise of fruit. She stared around her for a moment, taking in the nightstand, the bookshelves of Cthulhu wood, and the half-drunk glass of water left on the windowsill. No, she said out loud, testing to see if she had a voice. This is a dream. The breeze coming through the window slackened, and in the quiet she heard a distant, soft clacking, as though someone were placing pebbles on a sheet of plasteel. She rose and went to the door. The corridors of the manse opened in front of her as she followed the noise. She did not look around her as she went. She was sure that in this dream every detail would be as perfect as her memory. At last she stepped from a wide spiral of stairs into the sunrise gallery. It was set at the highest point of the manse. From here you could look all the way across the Asker mountain range and see the distant towers of Terra's equatorial hives. High, peaked windows were open to the air outside, and translucent curtains stirred in a wind that carried the smell of rain drying in the first heat of a new day. She could see the sunlight glinting off the great chrome and glass dome that enclosed the gardens beyond. Held back beyond it, the upper strata of Terra's blanket of pollution tinted the air a vivid mauve. A woman sat on the floor at the centre of the room, her back to Mercedes.
"Hello,"
said the woman, half turning her head. A rush of fleeting recognition passed through Mercedes, but she could not grasp it.
"Where is this place, if you don't mind me asking?"
"Home,"
said Mercedes, pausing to touch a leather-bound volume sitting on a shelf.
"My home, on Terra, before I left."
She opened the book. The Edge of Illumination, from the hand of Solomon Voss, ran across the title page in hand-brushed script.
"You have not dreamed of it in a long time, have you?"
said the woman sitting at the centre of the room.
"It was not a place that made happy memories,"
said Mercedes, and closed the book.
"You never went back."
No, said Mercedes. Home was not somewhere I ever wanted to return to.
So you followed your talent, and it led you out to the stars and into the company of wolves.
Yes, it did, said Mercedes.
She turned towards the centre of the room. The other woman still had her back to her, but Mercedes could see that she was busy with something that sat on the low table in front of her.
Who are you?
Mercedes asked.
I don't remember you. So why am I dreaming you?
The woman laughed, the sound brief and clear.
Don't you recognize me?
Mercedes blinked, then started forwards.
Ifriti.
The woman on the floor turned to look at her and smiled.
It is good to see you.
Mercedes stopped. Even in this dream, Ifriti Keeler looked different to how she remembered. The smile on her face was sad, her features lean and drawn, her hair cut short and streaked with grey and white. The beautiful remembrancer who had shared Mercedes' time amongst the lunar wolves and their fall to darkness was gone, replaced by something harder, something defined by purpose. Mercedes looked around again, then back to Keeler.
This is not a dream, is it? This is like before when you spoke to me about Loken.
That dream had come years before, but Mercedes had been able to remember it without effort. It had been more real than real, a moment of connection made possible by means that Mercedes could not explain without reaching for words like miracle.
You are really here, aren't you? In my dream.
Keeler was still for a second, then nodded.
I need to tell you something. And then I'm afraid I need to ask something of you.
What?
First you must understand, said Keeler,
looking back to what was on the floor in front of her. Mercedes moved around until she could see. She stopped and frowned. A disc of brass sat on the top of the polished wood. It was as wide as a dinner plate and divided into rings. Circles of polished stone and metal had been slotted into depressions in the wood, and Mercedes could see more discs cupped in Keeler's left hand.
Those are the signs of the planets and moons from
the time before Old Night, yes,
said Keeler, slotting more of the discs into place in each of the rings.
The planet of war, the maiden of dreams, the bringer of joy. And these beside them are the phases of the heavens, the symbols used by the scryers of the Sund, the burning tiger, the bloody Sagittar, the Weir of Souls, the Crown of Oceans, and so on.
I know them,
said Mercedes.
I read the Chaldeantis scripts when I was in the conservatory towers of Europa. Strange to think that part of humanity held on to such things, even after we had gone to the heavens they were meant to represent. Don't you think?
Asked Keeler with a humourless smile.
Relics of misguided philosophy. But like all of the things that humanity clung to as it aged, there is more truth in them than most would care to admit. It is crude, a lie of sorts, but to describe what is happening it will serve.
Mercedes frowned. There was something in Keeler's words that sent a prickle of ice over her skin. Behind her the curtain stirred as a gust of wind blew in through the open windows.
Ifriti, what's wrong? You never talk like...
You need to understand, Mercedes.
Keeler looked up, and her eyes were hard, her voice like the falling of an iron blade.
You must understand, or all is lost.
And her hand spun the disc. The symbols of stone and metal blurred as each ring of the disc began to spin at different speeds. Blurred, yet somehow Mercedes could still see each symbol as it flicked around.
As above, so below. As in the heavens, so on earth. As in the immaterial, so in the material.
Mercedes found that she could not look away from the blur of symbols.
Horus is coming to take the throne of humanity and slay the emperor. The forces of the warp ride with him. Never has such power been turned to a single goal. In the material, in the world of flesh, the battle is one of blood and fire, but as that battle rages, so another battle is being fought beyond.
Just as Terra sits at the centre of the cosmos in the beliefs of dead stargazers and fortune-tellers, so the Emperor and Terra sit at the centre of the forces aligning in the Immaterium. The spinning rings of symbols were slowing now. At her back, Mercedes felt a cold blast of air. She almost turned, but Keela was speaking again, her voice louder than the rising wind.
The Emperor is holding them back by force of will and by art. He is holding them back, and they cannot break him in the realm beyond. So they have sent their champion, Horus, to do with bloody hand what they cannot do in spirit. If the defences in the physical world can stand, he can keep the forces of the warp at bay. But if they fail...
The last ring of the disc was slowing. The wind was billowing through the chamber now. A book tumbled off a table, pages flicking over.
The defences are strong and Rogel Dorn is ready, but he does not see the whole scope of the battle. This is not a battle of three dimensions, or even four. It is a war split between realms, in which the actions taken in one world affect the other, in which acts done with mortal hands can echo beyond.
Mercedes was looking at the arrangement of symbols on the brass disc. She read the alignments, and memory unfolded the meanings in her mind from old parchments that she had thought mere curiosities when she'd read them. She read the position of the planets and the meanings of each of the symbols brought into concordance with them. She looked up at Keela.
This is not just a metaphor, is it? These symbols are not based on the planets. They are the planets. This is a design, a ritual alignment.
She stopped. The glass was shaking in the window frames. The warm dawn light had darkened.
"Marked by blood and slaughter, as above, so below," said Keela. "This is the dimension that Rogel Dorn does not see. If Horus can bring this into being, then the Praetorian's defences will mean nothing. You must reach him. You must tell him before it is too late. Remember!"
Suddenly she was shouting.
"Remember what you have seen!"
And the circles of symbols rose before Mercedes, no longer stone and metal, but burning in the air. She felt them press against her mind, unfolding into inference and meaning that she could not comprehend, even as they poured into her.
"Why me?"
called Mercedes over the howl that no longer sounded like wind. Light was draining from the dream.
"Why have you asked me to do this?" "Because I cannot," said Keela. "And because Rogel Dorn believed you before and will again. You showed him the truth of Horus turning on the Emperor. He will believe you." "I'm in a cell. How can I reach him?" "A way will open," said Keela,
her voice lifting over the howl of the rising wind.
"But you will have to walk it."
The floor of the room was shaking. The sky outside was bruised purple and iron.
"They will try to stop you,"
said Keela's face in the dream.
"Old friends and enemies alike. They will come for you."
A vase toppled off a side table. White flowers and water scattered onto the floor.
"How long until Horus comes?"
she shouted.
"He is already here."
The glass in the window shattered. The storm wind billowed in. Mercedes could smell ash and fire. And her eyes opened to a world filled with the scream of sirens. Void Fortress 693, Trans-Plutonian Gulf.
3 minutes to impact.
The voice blared in the dark. Sajiran kept his eyes closed, his thoughts still, his heartbeats rising. The double rhythm was still an alien surge through his blood.
"Blood on the stars!"
came the call from Ikrek, and the echo roared back from the mouths of the 20 warriors in the assault ram. Sajiran shouted the words, but behind his eyes his soul was silent. He heard the clink of mirror coins and kill talismans against armour and weapon cases.
"Down in the dark we hold the coins of their lives," growled Targo,
the Chthonian rough-edged as it came from his mouth. Others barked malformed replies. The words, like the clan runes scored into their armour and the gang talismans rattling against their battle plate, were mass-wrought. None of these warriors had ever seen Chthonia, much less earned scars in its warrens. They were a mongrel brood, pulled from the dark corners of a dozen worlds, Narain, Vortis, Manhansu, Sylor, Neo-Geddon, and other places forgotten before they were ever known. Gang killers, clan warriors, murder cult dross. They were alike in only one way. They all had the capacity to survive what had been done to them. The apothecaries and bio-adepts had begun their production in batches of tens of thousands. Drugs and gene activators had been dumped into the prospects. Thousands had died in those first minutes, their bodies pulled from the racks and dragged to the render vats. The process had continued without pause, cutting, implanting, injecting, information deluged into their brains by hypno-rigs. And as they left each step, another batch of meat took their place. More died. The remainder survived, grew, were hacked into the shape of space marines. When it was over, when they were bonded with armour and oathed to the Legion, they found themselves sons of Horus, warriors in a war that they had not seen the beginning of, and which would likely end long after their death. Many of the new sons of Horus took the traditions of the warriors who had been made before the Emperor's betrayal, and wrapped those trappings around themselves, children aping adults in the hope of finding a way to belong. Chthonian was the language of that belonging, the emblems of its gangs, the signs of status. Warrior cults proliferated in the ranks of the newborn, the Sons of the Eye, the Corpse Makers, the Brothers of the Seventh Crow, and more, all threaded with ritual and the mangled cultures of the worlds that had given the Legion its fresh blood. Sajuran spoke the words and wore the marks like the rest, but he had no need of the comfort of belonging. He could see this universe and this time for what it was, an age of cruelty and killers, and he needed no mark to know his place in it. 30 seconds, stand ready, came the pilot's voice. Sajuran opened his eyes. The red and blue of his helm display flooded his vision. Ikrek sat opposite, Bolter clamped to his harness, a red plume topping his studded helm. The sergeant slammed his closed fist into his chest as the assault ram's booster fired.
"For the Warmaster!"
A scream vibrated through the fuselage as the Magna Melter engaged. The ram's impact snapped through Sajuran with bone-breaking force. For a second he was blind as G-force drained the blood from his eyes. Then the mag harness snapped free and he was running forwards, the deck ringing under his feet. His vision cleared in time for him to see Ikrek's head vanish. Ceramite and bone shards rang on Sajuran's armour. The chug-boom of heavy cannons, the double thud of his heartbeats rising. A round hit Ikrek's corpse as it fell. Sajuran ducked left. His bolter was in his hand. A round hit the legionary behind him. The warrior gasped as he crumpled. Target runes flashed red across Sajuran's sight. He fired. They were in a vaulted junction between three wide corridors. Air was rushing out of the edges of the breach, punched by the assault ram through the exterior wall. Blast doors were already dropping across the mouths of the corridors. The automated cannon had dropped from a hatch in the roof. Machine-slaved and shielded with ceramite plates, it was pouring shells down onto Sajuran and his squad without pause.
"Breach the doors!"
shouted Sajuran as he fired up at the cannon again. Explosions flashed off its armour plates, shrapnel scattered from it. Micro-shards pinged from Sajuran's helmet like hail. The cannon barrel twitched around to track him. Four of his squad mates ran towards the closing doors. The cannon barrel swung away from Sajuran and put wide holes through two of them. Sajuran saw the gleam of a targeting lens nestled next to the cannon's barrel. He put a burst of three rounds into it. The cannon spun, firing blind, shells punching into the deck and walls. There were no troops yet, but they would come. This was one of the star forts that guarded the approaches to Pluto and the volumes around the Chthonic Gate. Like all the rest, it was the size of a battlecruiser, a behemoth of stone and metal 3 kilometres across, studded with batteries and void shield generators. It took a battle group to kill each one, and ships would be lost doing it. There were ships to spare, though. Hundreds of them. And, if taken, this star fort could protect a corridor towards Pluto's fortress moons. Ships could pour through that opening. So, a battalion of newborn sons of Horus had been unleashed to take the star fort by blade and blood. It was like driving a wedge into a stone sphere. Drive deep enough, and the sphere would crack, then shatter. Two of Saint-Germain's squad brothers reached one of the closing blast doors. They pulled melter charges from their backs, swung them into the ever-narrowing opening at the bottom of the doorway, and leapt aside. The charges armed an instant before the descending door met them. Spheres of blinding light screamed into being. The lower section of the door collapsed in a wash of molten metal. Saint-Germain was already running at the breach. A pressure wave almost knocked him off his feet as a second assault ram punched through the fortress's skin. He kept moving forwards. Lasfire whipped down the corridor towards him. He could see a barricade slung across the passage, gun barrels jutting from above a slab of plasteel. A cluster of shots hit his left pauldron and forearm. Chunks of ceramite cracked and blew off. He heard shouts as his squad came through the breach behind him. Bolts flew past him and struck the barricade. Mangled Chthonian war cries rose above the sound of gunfire. There was no point in pausing to fire back. That would get him killed. He needed to be close enough that they would not be able to bring their guns to bear, close enough that the barricade did not protect them. The spear strike doctrine, many of the other newborn would have called it, perhaps with a touch of reverence and pride in their words. Saint-Germain could see the similarity, but for him it was nothing to do with the old legion or aping its traditions. It was simply the best way to win. A lasbolt burned through exposed cable on his left thigh. A warning rune pinged in his sight. He felt the servos in his left leg stutter. He was 10 paces from the barricade. There were more of his squad behind him. He exploded into the last few strides and leapt. He saw a trooper in a void-sealed dome helm jerk back, gun rising. The eyes behind the viewslit were wide. Saint-Germain felt time fill the instant, become liquid, become a promise of what was to come. His mind reached back across the short years to running across the Chem Crags on the world of his birth, the howls of hunters behind him, the hunger in his stomach and the fear in his chest. That was what the rest of his siblings did not understand. The gang crests and kill marks, the Chthonian war words and titles, all of it was just a false skin over the true gift they had been given. He hit the top of the barrier and vaulted down into the space beyond. The nearest trooper turned to fire at him. Saint-Germain fired first. The bolter kicked in his hand. The trooper exploded in a spray of blood and disintegrating armour. Saint-Germain charged down the line of the barricade, bolt rounds spearing ahead of him. A trooper, braver than the rest, stabbed at him with a chain bayonet. Saint-Germain caught the rifle's barrel behind the spinning blade and yanked it downwards. The trooper's arms snapped, and his shriek rose and cut off as Saint-Germain slammed the human into the barricade wall. Blood slicked the floor. Gunfire pulsed in the smoke. Saint-Germain felt his beating hearts and the roar of his blood in his ears, a roll of thunder rising from within. This was where they were truly reborn, where the skin of their pasts fell away, not beneath the Chirurgians' blades or in the gene changes wrought on their flesh, but here, in the heat and stink of battle, here they were remade. An officer came at him out of the smoke, a glowing power sword in her hand. Saint-Germain felt himself smile as lightning sheathed the human's blade. This was joy and glory and life balanced on a razor edge. The officer lunged. He pivoted to the side, switching grip on his gun to fire point-blank into her gut. The bolter clacked empty. The blade stabbed into the air where he had been. She was fast, very fast, and dazzlingly fluid. Saint-Germain punched forwards, but the officer's sword flicked aside. The blade whipped across his forearm. Ceramite parted. Blood poured out, flashing to smoke as it met the blue haze around the cutting edge. Saint-Germain felt the stims thump into his blood as his physiology cut the pain away. He rammed his weight forwards. The officer moved aside, and her sword slashed across the plate under his arm. Fresh pain, and the reek of burnt meat inside his armour. This was the gap between the old and the new. He had been a killer for most of his life, but a warrior of the Legion for only months. He was transhumanly strong and had all the skills that 6 months of battle hypnosis could give, but he, like his newborn kin, lacked finesse, the honed skill to match their ferocity and strength. This human was just a human, and legionaries should not bleed to the cuts of mortals. He was faster and stronger, but at some level he was still just a youth with the desire to kill, hot-housed into something more than human, but far less than a god. He dropped his bolter and pulled the combat blade from his belt. The human officer was coiling back, spinning her blade to cut at the vulnerable joint at the back of his leg. He reached for her, the fingers of his left hand open to grasp a limb, his knife coming up in his right hand to slam into her gut. Not fast, and not as elegant, but it would still spill her entrails onto the deck. He did not see the warrior in yellow come for him until it was almost too late. He caught a blurred reflection in the burnished dome of the officer's helm and leapt back. That one moment saved his life. A chainsword churned sparks from his pauldron. He turned, catching a glimpse of a warrior in yellow battle plate with a plough-fronted helm. He did not have a chance to react, other than to bring the combat knife up to jam the cutting teeth of the chainsword as it ripped up towards his gut. With a scream of shearing metal, the blade ripped from his hand. Adamantine teeth sprayed out as the chain track unwound. The warrior in yellow did not even pause, but punched the guard into Sajuran's faceplate. Sajuran staggered, hit the barricade wall behind him and cannoned forwards, dipping his shoulder to hit the yellow warrior, but his foe was no new breed. This was a veteran son of Dawn, seasoned both in war and in killing former brothers. The warrior stepped back, lightning flash fast, brought a pistol up and fired. Sajuran fell backwards, pain exploding through him. A second shell exploded in the crater ripped by the first. Blood, black bone and shattered armour sprayed out. He fell, gasping, pain flooding his nerves and blood drowning his breath. The warrior in yellow had shifted his aim to pump shells into Sajuran's brothers as they came at the barricade. The human officer was moving towards Sajuran, blade still ready. A ragged clutch of soldiers were at her back, firing. None of them were looking at Sajuran. He was dead, a bag of meat in the shape of a legionary thrown aside by the tide of war. His world was a red-smeared blur. The officer stepped close to him, put a foot on his ruined chest, and brought the point of her sword to his neck. He drew a bloody breath as she tensed to ram the blade tip up under his chin. His hand flashed out. She tried to stab, but his hand was already around her wrist, gripping and crushing. Bones shattered, and he yanked her off her feet. He turned the blade in her hand, breaking fingers like twigs, and sawed it into her neck. He rose, roaring as the pain tried to pull him down. Blood and fragments of his blasted armour fell from him. The imperial fist turned, but too slow and too late. Sajuran rammed the human officer's power blade up into the legionary's gut. He heard shouts and the shrieking boom of a melter charge blowing a hole in the barricade. But his world was red and smelled of iron, and the sound of his heart's beating in his chest drowned out the rest. Prison ship Akos, Uranus High Orbit. Mercedes awoke and came to her feet as the cell flooded with red light. Sirens howled. The floor was shaking. Everything was shaking. Gunfire and ricochets echoed through the cell door. She took a step back. The door slammed inwards. She had a second to see a guard in red armour and a silver mask, a gun rising in his hands. The holes in its black barrel loomed wide in her eyes. The deck pitched. Mercedes slammed into a wall as the room turned over. The guard's gun fired. Shot and sound filled the air. She struck a wall and felt the air rush from her lungs. The guard tumbled from the door, arms and gun flailing. The room spun over again. Mercedes rose from the wall, floating, scrabbling at air. The guard hit a wall and rebounded. Red pearls of blood sprayed out from the bottom edge of his mask. She crashed into him. The gun went off again, and the guard's gun arm yanked him up with a crack of shattering bone. Shot ricocheted off the floor and walls. Mercedes screamed as she felt something punch into her back. The guard was spinning back, limbs slack, blood seeping from him in spheres. Mercedes was turning over and over, the open door, ceiling and walls flicking past. Gravity snapped back into force and hauled her to the ground. The guard landed on top of her in a tangle of limbs. She gasped. The sirens screamed on, the world red. She tried to shove the guard off her. Muscles wasted by 7 years of confinement in small spaces screamed. The guard spasmed. A wet gurgle came from his cracked chrome mask. Mercedes shoved up with all her strength and pitched him onto the floor. She scrabbled to the side. The guard was twitching, retching. She looked at the door, red light flashing beyond. She could hear shouts and screams over the alarms.
"You must reach him,"
Keeler's voice hissed in her thoughts. She pushed herself up and took a step towards the door.
"Bleh,"
the guard wheezed. Mercedes hesitated, then turned.
"Please,"
he said. She could hear the pain in his voice. She could see a sliver of his face through his broken mask. Young, blood running from lips and grey eyes looking back at her. She took a step back towards him. His eye was steady on hers. The gun came up. It was a pistol, the barrel a black circle looking up at her. She had a frozen second to realise that he must have been working it free as she pushed him off. She saw the effort twist his face as he began to pull the trigger. She dived back at the door. A bullet struck the frame. She twisted and scrambled back as another bullet slammed into the wall just above her. She gripped the cell door by its locking handle and yanked it shut. Then she was up and running, bare feet thumping into the grated floor as bullets struck the plasteel behind her. She ran past more cells. Some were open. Bodies, red and wet, lay on the floor inside. She heard hands hammering and muffled shouting from others. The floor lurched again. She could see a sealed door across the corridor ahead, yellow and black chevrons painted across it. She was 30 paces from it. Her run faltered. The yellow and black door slammed open. Mercedes froze. Guards in red and black armour with silver masks came through, alarm lights flashing from their visors. Shouts filled the air. She could see a wider space beyond the door, metal, blinking light filling a wide, vaulted junction.
"Help!"
The shout came from beside her. The first guard through the door had a quad-barreled cannon braced in his arms. Mercedes had a second to see her reflection in the guard's mask. There was nowhere to go, nowhere to run. The space beyond the yellow and black door vanished. The shriek of shearing metal tore through the air. The guard with the quad cannon flew back through the doorway as though yanked by a rope. Mercedes lunged for an open cell to her left. A howling wind poured down the corridor. Her hand caught the edge of a door as the deck pitched down. She cried out as her full body weight wrenched her arm. Debris streamed past her. Where the end of the corridor had been, there was now starlight and flame. For a second she stared down at it, unable to look away. She could see the pale blue orb of a planet hanging against a field of stars. Shapes glimmered in the dark, light catching on the hulls and prows of ships and the towers of void stations. It was beautiful, a serene and terrifying image. Fire streaked across the view. Explosions burst into being. Lines of flame and energy latticed the void. A piece of debris spun across the view, blocking out the sight of the planet and stars. Dust scattered into the vacuum from the chewed metal.
"No," the thought flashed through Mercedes' mind. "Not dust. Those are people."
An emergency blast door slammed shut over the breach. The howl of evacuating air stopped. The red alarm lights still flashed, their rhythm stuttering. The sirens had silenced. Ash drifted past Mercedes as she hung, panting, blood draining from the open cell doors in the corridor above to patter on the wall below like rain. Mercedes could suddenly hear her own heaving breaths. Gravity lurched again, and the corridor pitched back to near true. She half fell to the floor and then pulled herself upright. The sudden quiet was somehow worse than the noise it had replaced, as if she had been plunged into water and was waiting for the air in her lungs to run out.
"Help!"
The shout came again, louder now, echoing off the metal surfaces. She looked around.
"Here! Over here!"
She saw it then, an eye pressed against an open viewhole in a sealed cell door.
"Get me out!"
called the voice. She looked away, up at the other end of the locked corridor. Her mind was racing.
"Listen, you have to get me out,"
said the voice, high with panic.
"This ship is coming apart. Whatever air we have is not going to last."
Mercedes looked at the cell door. It was a rust-edged slab of metal. The lock control beside it was a cog-ringed set of slots.
"Find one of the guards!" called the voice, as though reading her hesitation. "There will be the corpse of one of those bastards somewhere. They had key medallions around their necks."
Mercedes did not move.
"Who are you?"
she asked, meeting the gaze of the eye looking through the viewhole.
"Who am I?"
said the voice.
"I'm like you. Someone who has spent a long time locked up and doesn't want to die."
Mercedes held the gaze. No matter where she was now, the nameless fortress that had been her prison had held people who, for one reason or another, were too dangerous to set free. A shiver ran through the deck. Metal creaked. Mercedes looked up as the sound ran up and down the passage.
"This ship won't last long," called the voice. "That explosive decompression meant that it's already taken a heavy hit or been ripped in two. What's left of it is going to shear apart."
Mercedes took a step away from the cell door.
"I can help get us both out."
"How?"
"I know ships. This is a Prometor-class transport. We're in sublevel 2 decks down from a hangar bay. I can get us there."
Another creaking shiver echoed down the passage.
"Do you want to live or not?"
Mercedes held still for a second, and then she was moving along the tilted corridor, looking in the open cells.
"Quickly! Quickly!"
called the voice from behind her. There were corpses and bits of corpses in every cell, limbs and bodies piled at the lower edges of the sloping floor. She found the body of a guard wedged in a cell doorway. The heavy hatch had clanged shut like a mouth when the gravity had pitched, mashing the guard against the doorframe. She pushed the door wide and began to feel for the lock medallion around the corpse's neck. A raw meat reek was rising in the remaining air. Mercedes tasted bile as her mouth ran with saliva and fought to keep herself from vomiting. The scars of point-blank shot cannon blasts marked the cell walls, and the body of another prisoner lay sprawled close by. She stopped, the facts piling up to conclusions in her mind. The guards had been going down the cells, executing the prisoners when the ship was hit. They had been making sure that no one got out, that no one fell into enemy hands.
"How long until Horus comes?"
"He's already here." "Faster! Faster!"
came the voice down the corridor. The walls were creaking. A pipe burst beneath the floor grating. Steam billowed into the corridor. Her hand found the medallion on a plasteel chain, wrenched it free and ran back to the closed cell door. The medallion was slick with blood, the edges toothed like a cog.
"Come on, come on!"
She slotted the medallion into the lock. It turned. The door released with a thump of bolts and pistons.
"Yes, yes, yes!"
A figure came through the door as it hinged wide. He was tall, very tall, and rake-thin. Grey-white skin pulled taut across his bones, jumpsuit hanging like a sack from his frame. Mercedes looked up at his face and froze. A band of metal circled his skull, riveted in place, holding a thick disc of iron across his forehead.
"You are a navigator,"
she breathed.
"Well observed,"
he said, glancing around as a fresh tremor shook the deck. The navigator hissed an expletive and began to run with long, loping strides. Mercedes followed. The corridor pitched and twisted, throwing them into a wall as they reached a sealed hatchway barring their path.
"Gravity systems are failing,"
said the navigator. Mercedes pushed herself up and tugged him back onto his feet. His arm felt almost fragile in her grasp.
"Structural collapse won't be far behind."
"How far to the hangar?"
asked Mercedes. Her head was spinning.
10 minutes, maybe,"
said the navigator, starting off again.
"If it's there at all."
"You said..."
"I said that I knew ships. If this death hulk has a standard layout, and if the decks beneath this one have not been flooded with fire or reduced to slag, then there should be a hoist shaft a few turns beyond this door."
Mercedes slotted the key medallion into the hatch lock and hoped that whatever luck had smiled on her so far would do so again. Lights flashed a dim green on the lock console, and the hatch opened a crack. Then the green lights faded. Mercedes shoved and felt the power-drained servo hinges give. A narrow gap opened. She squeezed through, the navigator following. Fading yellow emergency lights filled the wide passage beyond. Mercedes could smell smoke and burnt plastic. She moved forwards, matching the navigator's loping strides.
"Of course, I am presuming that there is nothing that's going to try to kill us between here and there," he said.
Gunfire laced from the dark. Mercedes ducked against a wall, bracing as her shape scuttled into view, hugging the ground on chromed spider legs, a gun mount on its back. Blasts of lasfire burned from the thing as it came forwards. The navigator was curled against the passage wall, hands pressed against his ears.
"Is that the hoist?" shouted Mercedes.
She could see a chevron-marked recess, set in a wide opening 15 paces down the passage between them and the spider machine.
"It's in the right place, but—"
She ran, ducking low and aiming for the door to the hoist platform. Lasblasts scattered across the deck behind her. She reached the opening and darted inside. The hoist platform swayed under her.
"Come on!"
she shouted back at the navigator. The spider machine had paused, its gun tracking to get a clean shot at her. The navigator glanced up and sprinted towards her, hands still held to his ears. The spider machine pivoted its gun and fired. Lasblasts left glowing splashes on the walls. Mercedes jammed the key medallion into the hoist door controls, hoping that they still had enough power to function. The floor under her feet lurched and began to slide downwards. The navigator gave a cry, rose and sprinted towards the hoist opening. Laz fizzed in his wake as the spider machine scuttled after him, firing wildly. He dropped onto the descending platform beside her, yelping with pain as he landed. The spider machine reached the lip of the opening as the roof of the hoist came down. Its gun rotated down to fire an instant before the edge of the roof crushed it into the floor. Something in its body exploded. Bits of metal and rubber showered down onto Mercedes.
"Whatever luck you bring seems to be holding," laughed the navigator. "If the shuttle is there, can you pilot it?"
asked Mercedes as she gasped for air.
"Yes,"
said the navigator.
"I can."
Mercedes coughed and gulped breaths as the hoist juddered down through the dark. Every now and then she felt the shaft shake and the groan as the metal of the ship strained. The shuttle was there when they reached the bottom. 3 shuttles, in fact, red and black. Their wings swept forward, held silent in the cradles above the hangar deck. Everything else was carnage. Mangled servitors lay on the deck, crushed by machinery that had tumbled through the space and now lay in smashed heaps. The reek of fuel hid the smell of blood, and her feet splashed in puddles of promethium as they ran to the remaining craft.
"No!"
hissed the navigator, glancing at the first shuttle and then moving on.
"No!"
He reached the last, gave a snort, keyed a rune on the cradle, and pulled himself up onto the ramp of the machine. Mercedes followed. He was already strapping himself into the pilot cradle, muttering and keying controls.
"I'm going to need your help,"
he said, eyes moving over the console, as Mercedes strapped herself into the second cradle.
"What do you need me to do?"
"Hand on the controls and hold her steady," he said,
his fingers moving over buttons and dials like a clavier player's. The shuttle lurched, and then began to hum. Engine noise rose.
"I don't know how far this will get us," he said, "but so far our luck's holding. Now, hold steady."
She did not answer. Exhaustion had begun to fall on her like the blow of a hammer. Her head was throbbing with pain.
"Nihlus,"
he said. She raised her head.
"My name is Nihlus,"
he repeated, and gave a smile.
"Nihlus of House Yashar."
He keyed a control. The blast doors to the external void shook, trembling as power-starved systems fought to obey. A crack opened, grew wider, and stopped. The air in the hangar drained out, rocking the shuttle in its cradle.
"Mercedes," she said,
eyes fixed on the doors.
"I am Mercedes Oliton."
Nihlus grinned.
"Well, Mercedes Oliton, I'm not sure this thing will fit through that gap, so I may have begun introductions prematurely."
As the shuttle's engines roared to life, the spilled fuel soaking the hangar deck ignited in the last of the air. Flames streamed past the shuttle through the open doors. Mercedes found her hands were gripping the controls hard. The docking cradle released, and the shuttle shot forwards, through the gap, fins almost catching the doors. Behind them, the chewed stern of the ship that had been their prison tumbled on through a cloud of its own debris. G-force punched through her, draining blood from her sight, forcing the breath from her lungs in a gasp. She had a brief image of smeared stars and flashes of white fire. Nihlus had gone still, his long-fingered hands locked on the controls.
"Sweet blood of the ancestors," he breathed.
Then the world went black, and she could feel the burning void reaching out to greet them.